Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Patrick McKenna. Hello, Patrick.
Hello.
So Patrick is director of Missouri's Department of Transportation, and he's joining us today. And Patrick, I will say I was struck. It's been several days now since the State of the State, and probably the most talked about topic was the governor's proposal for almost $860 million to expand the number of lanes for Interstate 70, specifically in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Columbia, right?
Right.
So kind of walk us through the history. I mean, this is not the first time we've been down this path here on I-70. So kind of walk us through the path, why we need to do something, and then what this is going to look like.
Well, you know, I-70 has been really one of the most talked about unfunded needs in the state for decades. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when it was originally built, one of the first segments of the interstate system, Eisenhower's interstate system, and it has served Missouri extraordinarily well. It is old. And it needs upgrade. And, you know, it's not to say that it's been static. We've been working mm-hmm. on particular segments. We've been working coming out of the urban areas for several years. And really in earnest, about 5 years ago, we really, with the commission's guidance, the Missouri Highway and Transportation Commission, they really wanted us to move and advance forward. We have specific problems, and this is kind of the strategy we have right now. We have specific problems in transportation all over the state. And rather than always looking out 40 years and saying what the needs are then, let's address the current problems. And when we do that, when we continue to solve current problems, then all of a sudden your transportation network starts becoming more reliable, more safe, and more functional for the economy and for the people that are using it. So in that vein, and the way we look at it, even though we haven't called it the I-70 project, if you look at the work we're doing in the middle part of the state with the Rocheport Bridge, that is most certainly a key component of the I-70 project. Mm-hmm. We're replacing one bridge, one structure carrying I-70 east and westbound, and we're going to split that into two bridges, two structures, and that's underway and going very well. That took state, local, federal partnership. Certainly, Congressman Graves, Governor Parson, and Senator Blunt were heavy hitters in that case that we made. We received a large federal grant, $81 million, to get that going. But when you look at on the Kansas City side, the Buck O'Neill Bridge, which is also about a $250 million project, that's a key connection between I-70 and 35. That's a major corridor for us, and it's a major pinch point. So we're taking care of that I-270 northbound coming from the Chain of Rocks Bridge, which is now moving forward under contract. We're partnering with Illinois. That bridge and then feeding onto 270 and the upgrades there, that's the single biggest project in Missouri in the last 15 years. That plus climbing lanes at Mineola, and several overpasses that we've been removing for age and condition, mm-hmm. as well as for the fact that there are bottlenecks for freight. We have to divert oversized loads off of I-70 into the local communities, and that's a problem. So we're trying to do that. And over the course of the last 5 years, we have nearly $1 billion underway on I-70 on the corridor, if the way we define it. So the strategic move by the governor to look at, and you know, they asked for a lot of information, and we fed information about the entire corridor, what the needs were, what the unfunded needs are, and what work we're doing. And they really did look at segments. They looked at the suburban Kansas City and St. Louis areas, and they looked at Columbia as the largest kind of bottlenecks and significant needs on that system. Mm-hmm. We certainly agree with that. And we think that leadership, the governor's staff did a terrific job. The governor did a terrific job in looking at this and then suggesting the resources necessary to work on those segments, which all told is about 50 miles, 52 miles. And that'll be defined by when we get to the actual design and the construction work. But these are key elements that are going to make I-70 work much better for decades. And it's just such a tremendous thing to be working in transportation and to see the commitment, and that commitment followed with their proposed resources that the governor has put forward. Fantastic.
Sure. Well, and the overriding reasoning behind it, I think, were two things, basically. Safety, obviously, yeah, as well as congestion.
That's right.
So in those suburban areas there, so mm-hmm. let's talk about Columbia, since it's closest to most folks right. who would be listening here. What would the work in Columbia look like?
Well, that's still to be designed. mind, but in our current funded statewide transportation improvement program, we do have a project that is being designed right now to address some of the needs, particularly on the I-70 and 63 intersection, if you will. There are very complicated built-out environment structures, businesses, all kinds of impacts that we're going to need to plan for, both environmentally and from a private property perspective, and how the community wants this to function within the community. So that is underway and is funded. What we will have to do now is gauge, because the estimate for the additional work in that region, in that specific area, is about just over $400 million as part of the governor's plan. And so what we have to do is figure out if the timing works to coordinate those projects. We'd like them to work to coordinate those projects because it won't make sense to do them in multiple phases. We have to work through the complexity of drawing down federal funds in a plan. That Columbia project we have right now is a big part of our investment plan with the Federal Highway Administration for this coming year. So we're going to have to time those well and coordinate it. But I think this gives us the opportunity to engage in the community, not to dictate the design, but to work with the community to find what works best within the project constraints and within all the environmental issues that we'll have to deal with and everything else. So that's a matter, you know, you see it, we've seen it here locally, more locally, with a project going on with 54 and 63. You know, some consternation kicked up. But I think what people need to understand is we go through a very prescribed process considering alternatives. We have to do an alternatives analysis. This is not meant to agitate people. It's literally we take on, here's a engineering problem. The engineering problem is moving people, particularly the movement coming southbound on 63 and then moving into the city on 54. And we see that as a current problem and one that can grow over time. So trying to find an engineering solution to that within the proposed budget, within the project budget, you don't always come up with solutions that then when the public sees them that they want to have happen. So we have to work through that process. We're going through that now. We're getting a lot of great feedback there. It's a similar thing on a much grander scale that we'll have to go through with 63 and 70. And then certainly, you know, we're going to have to be sensitive to the high demand times that come in that area with Mizzou and all of the university system, the university hospital system. So we're going to have to really work to create a project that the community can be proud of, can use on a local basis, but can also move travel and travelers through the system. Freight is a big deal moving on I-70, and we're going to have to keep that in consideration as well. Governor had kicked off a task force looking at supply chain issues. I-70 improvements are some of the recommendations that came out of that.
So what's the timeline where you say it's in the design stages? It would be in the design stages once the funding is approved.
Yeah, so we have to go through the full appropriations process here to determine if the General Assembly agrees and can support that. We certainly hope that to be the case, and we'll be doing a lot of work to provide information throughout that process. But we have an existing project that's underway that's being designed, and now we have a possibility of additional resources being potentially added to that or appended once we get the other one going. So project development work, and that goes from, you know, the design work, it's the right-of-way impacts, it's all the impacts that could happen from an environmental perspective. And all of that has to be worked out. The final design has to be done. Project development typically takes, on something of this scale, it typically takes a solid 2 years to do that work. And that usually runs about 15 to 20% of the overall project cost. You know, you're paying, we would most likely go through, and we have to look at this, but would most likely go through a competition for the design as well as the construction. Innovative procurement called design builds really served the state well. And we've had great success with a lot of our local contractors have really done a phenomenal job for the state in the work that they've done. We've run about 20 of these projects since they've been authorized. And for the more complicated and larger projects, they're really a good way to get the innovation that comes from the private sector. A lot of times what we'll have to do, this is going to be very complicated because we're going to need to keep traffic flowing while we're doing all this. So it's almost like building a plane while you're flying it, you know, but that's very important for how local businesses in the community will have to operate during that inconvenience of construction. We have to take that into consideration so that we don't jam up local businesses and create unintended consequences for what ultimately is a good thing.
Sure. So construction could easily take 2 to 3 years?
Oh, certainly. Probably, I would say, you know, if we compare this in complexity to some of what's going on 270, that's a 4-year construction project. And every project is different, so we'll have to look at that. But I would say certainly on the Columbia project, we'd probably be looking at 3 years of construction or maybe 4. And again, we just have to stage that properly and look to see what the traffic control is. That's usually what is the duration, is based on how complicated keeping traffic flow is. Because obviously, it would be a lot simpler just to close it down.
Sure.
Do the work. You know, we were able to do that in St. Louis 15 years ago with I-64, but there were more alternatives to travel in that area. I think I-70, closing that down, wouldn't work at all.
Yeah. So the idea, it's kind of a two-phase approach with I-70. So the state taking on the suburban areas, and the idea would be that use of federal funds could help connect the sites. Is that the expectation?
Well, actually, you know, the work that precedes this, which is the largest capital program in Missouri state history, the commission approved last July a $10 billion capital improvement program. In that program, over the period of 2023 to 2027, we incorporated the increase in the Missouri state motor fuel tax, as well as the federal funds made available from last November in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. We committed all of the federal funds in that 5-year program to the current capital program. So what we're talking about with these improvements is actually a direct investment by the state over and above what's available at the federal level. Now, over the course of the next several years, we certainly believe we can apply for and seek additional funding where we can. But out of the formula funds, those are already committed. So it could be something, depending on the duration of this, that in the out years, we may well be able to connect that. We also think there are some good things we could do in the broader corridor outside of the limits of these three distinct construction projects that would increase reliability of the system. What we just did with the climbing lane at Mineola Hill, that has been really well received. There are other areas that could benefit from a climbing lane. You know, as we're looking at this, we don't have a fully connected outer road system on I-70. There's a possibility of doing that. And then that would enable us to deal with emergency issues. If you have a 2-lane facility and there's an incident or there's a jackknife tractor trailer, commercial vehicle, you know, the emergency services folks, if they're not on a connected outer road piece, can be delayed in getting to that. That really slows down the response time. So if we connect the outer road, maybe put in some emergency slip ramps, we can be much more efficient at the emergency response that is necessary in that case. Climbing lanes can help alleviate frustration when you have elevation changes. Of course, everybody knows the deal, getting behind that commercial vehicle that's now going a half a mile an hour faster than the one beside it. That type of thing can really improve the reliability of the system at a very reasonable cost. And then some additional overpasses that still need to be replaced to have them be wider and higher so that we can get larger shipments through there as well. That will also improve the reliability of the system. And again, at, I think, very limited cost. There are stretches of I-70 that really only carry about 35,000 vehicles a day. And it's outside of the urban centers, of course. But when you compare that, there are outer roads in St. Louis that carry over 20,000 cars a day. So, you know, we have to gauge that. And I think when we target the investment to the current problems, one of the things that we look at, we're always looking at what are the future issues. And I think one of the discussions we're having right now is a similar approach on I-44. Very substantial corridor in terms of freight volume, value, and the capacity issues that we're starting to see that are similar to what we deal with in Columbia and the other areas. You know, when you look at Springfield, when you look at Joplin, we're not as far along in the environmental work. As a matter of fact, we'd need to initiate that for I-44. So I think as we're talking to policymakers, as we're discussing the needs of the entire system, it's important to understand that we're not focused entirely on I-70, and we can't be. because we manage and operate the entire system. But 44 is right behind it, and certainly it's twice as long, so it's a much more challenging enterprise to expand that capacity. But I think if we do a similar approach where we target those urban areas and we deal with the reliability, the capacity, and the safety in those areas, well, that's going to benefit everybody traveling through.
So the I-70 project, as we said, is a big piece of the proposed budget, but it's not the only transportation work that he's proposing. So let's talk a little bit about the State Transportation Improvement Program. There's about $380 million dedicated to it. So kind of explain, folks, what that program is.
So the Missouri Highway and Transportation Commission is really the governing body of MoDOT. There are six members that are appointed by the governor and are confirmed by the Senate. It's a bipartisan group. There can be no more than three members of one party on the commission at any given time. They serve six-year terms, and they're volunteers. So they come in from various backgrounds, and they oversee the department and govern it. They have the contract authority. They have constitutional authority in terms of the expenditures from the road fund. And what they do as a primary function, we bring every month construction contracts for their review and hopefully approval or discussion point. And those are from a standard plan that we have, which is the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. It's a five-year capital plan for all of the projects that we have that we are estimating available financial resources and what we believe we can fund and deliver over the period of that 5 years. It's updated every year, so we're always in a planning cycle. The current STIP, as I mentioned, is the largest in Missouri state history. There are over 1,803 construction projects in there, 1,443 bridges, and we touch about 46,000 lane miles of roadways over the course of this 2023 to 2027. So the infusion of spending authority for this particular area is for our construction program, and that's specifically where we pay our contractors from. It's essentially outsourced work that our contractors do. It's work that's already been approved by the commission for contracts that are underway, and this is the estimate of the resources we need to pay to those contractors. Now, that's on top of existing authority, so that brings us up to about $1.2 billion of spending authority in fiscal 24 that is going to go to the private sector for construction. It's a really great thing. When I came here several years ago, we only had in the neighborhood of $300 million a year to spend to operate this system. The replacement value just of the roads and bridges in Missouri, I don't think people understand the scale. It's about $165 billion. So can you imagine $300 million a year going into $165 billion to maintain and improve that system, less than 0.3% per year? It's no wonder we have some condition issues, and you know, certainly we're working on those, but we're thrilled that this resource has grown through the good work of the General Assembly, the governor, political leaders, both here at the state and at the federal level. So now we're up to about 1% a year to have that value. The spending authority in the governor's budget is directly related to the payments we make to our contractors who are out there doing the work.
Well, and that work includes, I always like to look at it through the lens of what it means for folks here in Cole County, Callaway County. So there are 23 projects in Cole County and 20 projects in Callaway County. And to me, that, you know, while occasionally I might drive on I-70 and might have some ancillary benefits to me, these are things that I will likely encounter every day.
So that's right.
Maybe you can give them some examples as to what some of these projects might be.
We have to operate and maintain the entire network, and it's 34,000 miles of road and 10,400 bridges. And so the projects that we have, MoDOT doesn't sit around and pick these. The commission doesn't sit around and pick them. We have it's really a nationally recognized program in our community engagement. So we have local planning partners all over the state, regional planning commissions, and then they're informed by transportation advisory councils. We have over 1,200 volunteers that make up these transportation advisory councils, and they're interested citizens and community leaders all over the state. We meet with them and bring them, here are the needs in the system. Here are the bridges that need to be rehabilitated or replaced over the course of the next 5 years, or we'd have to close them because of a safety issue or something like that. We inspect them. And much of what we're doing is either small enhancements on interchanges to make them safer, or we're literally replacing the bridges that might be 60, 70, 80 years old. And we're doing that all over the state. It was really important, I believe, when we were conceiving the resource availability and we We started planning this several years before it actually happened, before the gas tax happened, before the federal bill happened. It was really important to the commission to get a return to taxpayers all over the state to improve kind of the general condition of the roads and bridges that people use mostly. And while we, of course, have work on the interstates and some of the projects you hear about, the vast majority of those 1,800 projects that we're talking about, including the ones here that you mentioned, the 43 in the local areas, they're intended to maintain that system and to keep it functioning well and to spread it around the state and around the region appropriately. And it's, I think, only because we took that approach that now policymakers are considering a targeted investment on a major corridor that we don't often get to fully invest in, like I-70. But that's really most of what you're looking at, is just the operation and maintenance of the existing program. We do long-range planning, and we poll citizens when we do that. We do surveys, and time after time, every time we do it, the very first thing that comes up, and it's far and away the highest demand, is to take care of what we have.
Yeah,
I think people do appreciate that Missouri built a very large system over 100 years. We did it on the cheap, honestly. We don't own every bit of land underneath every road. We have easements that we have, so we don't always own all the land. And we didn't buy whole swaths of land for big, wide corridors. We bought just what we needed to get the job done. It's kind of a sensible Missouri approach to it.
Sure.
And that's why we've been able to build such a large network. But that was built over 100 years, and it takes a tremendous amount of the resource that we receive just to maintain it and keep it safe and functioning, to upgrade guardrails. You know, we've been adding things like high-tension cable guardrail in medians. That is a lifesaver, and it avoids head-on collisions if people cross over the median, unfortunately, and when that happens. But those are the types of things we're trying to do, improve the safety and reliability of the system for all the public that works on it.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there. I mean, a lot of folks, whether it's city or county or state, it's just fix my road, right?
Exactly.
Fix the potholes, fix the
exactly.
things that I encounter every day. But I think it's also interesting. MoDOT's just not about bridges and roads. I mean, there are other transportation areas of which you're responsible.
Yeah.
So, and I believe it's around $300 million in multimodal projects.
That's right.
So kind of walk us through what some of those might look like.
When we look at, when we approach it, you know, the citizens of Missouri own the roads and bridges. We are the stewards of them, but, you know, as an ownership entity, when it comes to the other modes, you know, if you look at the rail lines, we have the second and third busiest rail hubs in the nation, St. Louis and Kansas City. Very significant Class 1 rail traffic, freight traffic moving through Missouri. It makes sense because of our location in the country, right? But there's been tremendous investment. And you have to recognize that's private investment. Those are private companies that own those rail lines. And invest in the rail cars. They're making money moving product across this nation, very key to our entire transportation network and supply chain, but those are not owned by the state. And so there are occasions when it makes perfect sense to partner up and to take care of some of the issues that we face. One of the investments that the governor lined out, and I'm so thrilled that this was recognized, consider we had that tragedy in Mendon last June,
right,
with the Amtrak derailment. Unfortunately, four people lost their lives crossing on a county road that did not have improvements to it. So there were no safety devices other than crossbucks to alert people. It was a stop sign. You have to stop and look and go over, but no active controls. We consider those passive controls. Missouri has over 1,400 passive at-grade crossings between roadways and the rail lines. And so we have to intersect with the railroads and work with them. The governor put $25 million of general revenue with an assumption of another $10 million. We're trying to work with Federal Rail Administration. I met with them in Washington a week ago to discuss this and a couple other matters. But what we're trying to do is jumpstart and target the passenger rail locations where we can improve, or in some cases, we might find that the best solution might be to close the crossing. In other cases, we'll take it from passive to active and put gates and lights up. That's not cheap. It costs about between $350,000, $400,000 at each one of those locations.
Wow.
We've been able to handle almost all of that on the state highway system. Out of about 500 crossings, we've got all but about 22 of them have active controls. But the issue here is I can't necessarily take state resources that go into the road fund and take them off system. That's unconstitutional. So having general revenue infused in here, we typically receive about $1.5 million to take care of this issue. And you figure with 1,400 crossings, that helps us match and draw down the full federal funds. That alone is probably a 100-year build-out to resolve these rail crossings. So on a safety basis, as a public response to a tragedy, I think it's an appropriate public response. And we're really excited that the governor put that in the budget. That's one of the modes. We also have transit here in Missouri. We have one of the largest rural transit networks in the nation. So every county has some form of transit that is serving the population there. In many cases, particularly in the rural areas, this is the key link that helps people age in place. May not be able to drive anymore, and we have some micro transit. We've got some great operators. Oates is a wonderful operator, Jeff Tran here in Jefferson City. So what we do as a department is we actually administer the federal programs that then can help support the local providers, or the, you know, sometimes they're quasi-governmental groups. Local governments support them as well as we do. We haven't done a phenomenal job in Missouri of supporting transit. You know, we're one of the lower investment states around, certainly in the region. But the federal programs have been pretty robust, certainly throughout the pandemic. And what we do is try to make sure that that money gets out to those providers, helps support their operations, and helps them upgrade their vehicles that they're using. We also, on a similar basis, we kind of administer the state and any federal funds that come available for port investment in the state. 14 public ports in the state, and those are huge economic engines for the state. So the development that's occurring over the last several years, and with additional investments that have been made available through the General Assembly, that's just a win for the state from a supply chain basis and otherwise. And then, of course, we have airports. We have over 120 public airports in the state, and we're actually a block grant recipient. So we act as the FAA here in the state of Missouri on behalf of those airports. So we help administer the federal funds. We get the monies out to the airports so that they can improve their facilities and really to support. This is it's an amazing network of small local airports throughout the state that are quite busy. You know, you get into the rural areas, a lot of it is crop dusting and things like that, but there's a lot of economic activity surrounding each one of those airports.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We'll circle back on a couple of those. So ports. So obviously, Jefferson City, Cole County, and Callaway County are trying to create a port.
Right.
What's the climate for developing ports right now? As director of MoDOT, do you see the growth potential there for it?
Yeah, you know, I think that each community kind of weighs in the pluses and minuses to it. You have to have a lot of landside investment to do that, but it really does look like there's an earnest effort here in the community to support that. And, you know, we're trying to help out where we can. There are a lot of developments that are going on, and we want to make sure, you know, Missouri's got over 1,000 miles of navigable river waterways. And that's a tremendous advantage. And the ability to move bulk product, it's kind of a slow move right now, but there are advancements that are going on right now in the industry. There are new vessel classes that are being created that move containers on vessels and do it with a very low draft. They're under development from private companies now. We see a lot of promise with that, and particularly with different classes of those vessels. There are some that are going to be, you know, coming out right up from Pascagoula on the Mississippi and bringing very substantial freight to and from the region. But then when you branch off and get into the Missouri River and some others, there may well be some smaller vessel classes that will work very well there. And being prepared as a community to take advantage of that, because it's not just your traditional products. You know, if you think of agricultural products, when we think of more speed in transporting in this method, you think of the potential for refrigeration. If you can do that, you can actually have value-added agricultural products that could then be shipped on a quicker basis at a cost advantage to maybe other forms of transportation on a scale that's different than what you do. So these are really good opportunities. I think it's important for communities like this capital region to consider whether that would be beneficial for the economy of the region and to help develop it. So these are good developments.
So the elephant in the room with all of this is we're at a pretty high inflation rate right now. So what effect has that had on planning? Whether it's the multimodal devices or bridges, roads, etc. What effect has that had?
You know, we had what I thought was nearly a perfect plan. Mm-hmm. And it's just like Mike Tyson says, right? Everybody's got a great plan until they get punched in the nose. And inflation kind of punched us in the nose. However, because of really, I think, wise commission policy that guides us, we have a process, our statewide transportation Improvement Program, we plan out, we project 5 years of revenue, and we then fill in what we think we can do in terms of projects. But what we don't do is we don't program 100%. So the current plan is for fiscal year 23 to 27. We've programmed 100% of our estimated resources in fiscal year 23, 4, and 5. And then in 26 and 7, we only programmed 50% of the available resources on average. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it gives us fiscal constraints. So in a 5-year period, we've actually programmed only 80% of our estimated resources, which the entire reasoning behind that is to deal with issues or to adjust to things that need to happen. So because we update it every year, so in July this coming year, we'll shift that to be a 2024 to 2028 plan. Normally we'd have at our level of construction in this plan, besides the program development, we have about $1.5 billion of construction funds available for new construction awards mm-hmm. each year. So next year, we should be able to bring forward about $750 million of new projects and work those into the new plan. Well, our construction program is running right now, this fiscal year, 29% ahead of budget. We've been at or below budget for a decade. So this is really difficult to absorb. Fortunately, we don't and we haven't had to move any projects yet, because what we're doing is we're still awarding, because these are issues that are affecting our construction industry, and they're real. The price of materials, the price of fuel, you know, we have an asphalt index, which is kind of a gauge of liquid asphalt, and it's a petroleum-based index. Coming through and out of the pandemic, we were at $375 a ton. We went up over $760 wow. a ton at the peak. Now it's starting to come back down,
yeah.
but that translates into the bid prices. And this has been a very risky time and a very challenging time for our construction industry. Labor, equipment, materials, the real building blocks, and those materials really being asphalt, the limestone, they're the rock, they're the steel, they're the concrete, all of those things are the building products. And then orders and backlogs, in some cases, if you just want to go up and mm-hmm. set up now to be a paving contractor, go in and put an order in for a paver that might cost you $1 million. You have to wait for 2 years to get it. So all of those complexities are being factored into the prices that we're receiving. And what we have to do as the public agency is gauge between the reality of that, what we need to move in our construction program, because some of these things have to be done this year or we have to, say, close a bridge. So the impact to the public against the cost to the public are things we weigh. We have to make sure we're getting good competition and good prices. We have had some rejections of construction bids. That is not well received, as you can imagine, by the construction industry. But, you know, we're trying to be the advocate for the taxpayer, too. Mm-hmm. So when we see things that even beyond our re-estimates may be beyond what we think are reasonable, we have to really consider whether or not to move forward with that. But by and large, we've either run our program on schedule or very close to the schedule. It's just at a higher cost right now. And what that's doing is it's eating availability of future projects that we haven't programmed. It's just not knocking us off our current schedule. And that's the wisdom of leaving yeah. a little bit of slack in those out years for these very instances. So sure. Fortunately, that's where we are.
Okay. Well, you touched on labor. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly MoDOT has had some staffing issues
yep.
from hiring, retention.
Right.
Part of the governor's plan included another pay increase. I guess I'm curious how last year's pay increase, how that has affected staffing right. and retention. What are the challenges you face now going into this year?
Yeah, well, we face them going into the winter storm coming in. So at present, we're about 800 equipment operators short. What we need to handle a statewide storm that goes for multiple shifts. We can handle the first shift because I've got enough people to do it. But when we get into the second shift, and we run during emergencies, we run 12-hour shifts around the clock. So that's been a challenge. We started the winter about 1,000 short, and that's full-time, that's temporary part-time, that's emergency hiring that we do, that we draw people in that aren't quite as busy in the winter and have commercial driver's licenses.
Sure.
So all told, about 1,000 short. That is been a huge challenge. Last year, we were about 600 short. Mm-hmm. So we have had multiple years of workforce issues, and primarily it's because we really haven't been paying to market, even in the public sector market. So that's been a challenge. our team continues to try to meet that challenge as best we can. There's no doubt that what it means is a little lower service level. And it's in the things that people take pride in this state. When you look at litter on the side of the road, we get a lot of complaints about that, particularly in the urban areas. And, you know, you might find even deer carcass, this type of thing, which when you're driving, when we're this low on staff, we are doing the life safety issues. So if it's in the middle of the road, we're taking care of it. If it's on the side of the road, it's a lower priority. And when we don't have the staff to cover everything, we have to cover the life safety issues. And it's just a priority basis. It's frustrating for us. Our people are frustrated, but the support from the governor and the General Assembly in the last year has had an effect. We're just now seeing a tapering of the outflow. We were losing up to 93, 94 people a month this past year. So in fiscal year 2022, we lost 907 people.
Wow.
And so over an 18-month period, it was about 1,500 people. We had gone from it being a nagging problem to being a severe crisis. And we had a lot of support from the commission, and the move last year by the General Assembly and the governor to move an emergency supplemental, that 5.5% increase, that was really important. And what has been proposed again to kind of at least keep pace with inflation, and inflation being pretty high right now, what is being proposed is another emergency supplemental for the potential of March. So that really is having an impact. And we're seeing the last couple months, we've actually seen a slowing of the outflow. And that is, boy, is that welcome. But we have, in the last few years, we have lost about 15,000 years of experience in our enterprise. So even if we solve the problem today, we probably have a decade to reconstruct and rebuild that experience level. We're in it to win it. So that's right. Exactly what we're going to do. And, you know, it's always great to have new people come into the organization. So we're continuing to recruit. And as we can reset toward and closer to the market, we'll be able to attract and retain folks going forward.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, certainly you have a few challenges facing you in the coming year. What's the ones going to keep you awake at night?
Well, you know, every time it comes to safety, you know, it comes to the safety of the traveling public. People are busy these days, but they're distracted. And that carries from the work life to the home life to life on the road. And I have in my employ in the organization, we generally have about 3,000 people out working on the roadways every day, and they are in harm's way. And I'm concerned about that because there are four behaviors that really stack up to fatal consequences, and it happens every day. You know, approximately 3 people a day die on Missouri roadways. Usually it's about 2 of them are unbuckled.
Yeah.
And that is a tragedy because that doesn't cost anybody anything. We don't have to engineer that out. We just have to have people think about, if you're not thinking about yourself, think about the people that care for you, your family, and the people that count on you. You know, with that type of scale, people are driving too fast. Think about it. We only build things for the speed limit. The guardrails are designed to handle you at the speed limit, not at 120 miles an hour.
Right.
During the pandemic, we saw a lot of these behaviors really explode where people started driving a lot faster. That hasn't fully abated, and we needed to. So speed, unbuckled, driving distracted with their phones, and frankly, still impairment. People driving under the influence, whether it's drugs or whether it's alcohol, those are fatal consequences waiting for you. And even if it doesn't happen to you, what we find is a lot of times the person driving and most responsible actually harms others. And that's really the big thing. We are really excited that we started several years ago what's called, we coined it, it's a buckle up, phone down. Two distinct behaviors. If you think the scales across the nation, so anywhere you're traveling, you know, last year, 43,000 Americans died on our nation's highways. And, you know, I just can't help but think that if that came from an attack from abroad, we'd take national action on this. Yeah. And we could, on those four behaviors that I talked about, I firmly believe that if every American, if every Missourian tomorrow resolved to slow down, buckle up, put the phone down, and drive sober, we'd cut our fatality in half overnight without any engineering, without any other thing, just cut it in half on behavior alone. And everybody thinks that they can drive while they're reading something on their phone. They think they're good at it. You're lucky. If anything jumps out in front of you, if a road condition is problematic and you don't see it, we have people driving through entire work zones, not even realizing they're in a work zone.
Oh my.
And we have workers, both ours and the companies that do the work on the roadways, literally jumping out of the way and people not even slowing down or realizing that they're even in a work zone. And if there's anything that really keeps me up, that is an overriding concern, is keeping our people safe and keeping the people that travel on our transportation network safe. And a lot of that really comes down to individual responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege to drive. It's not a right. And you have to think about other people on that network and their families and their loved ones and how connected they are and what a tragedy is every time we lose somebody.
Yeah.
It's just such an incredible loss to a community. You just have to keep that in mind every time you get into a car. If you're not able to drive, my goodness, there's so many ways. Use that technology instead of driving distracted to call an Uber or to call a taxi or to call someone else.
Sure.
And get where you're going safely.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.